Good afternoon to all of our listeners, and welcome to our next episode of Bulls, Bears, and Bowties. And this is Greg Silberman, Chief Investment Officer at ACG Wealth. And really honored and grateful to have our guest on the line today, Vivek Wadhwa, coming to us from Menlo Park. Vivek, you know, it never serves one fully to read a bio, but nonetheless, we have to do that just to give you a brief intro here. So Vivek is an American technology, and thank goodness for Wikipedia, right? So Vivek is an American technology entrepreneur and academic. He's distinguished fellow and adjunct professor at Carnegie Mellon School of Engineering at Silicon Valley, and distinguished fellow at the Labor and Work-Life Program at Harvard Law School. He is the author of quite a few books: Your Happiness Was Hacked, Why Tech is Winning the Battle to Control Your Brain, and How to Fight Back. One in particular that I really enjoyed, Vivek, is Driver in the Driverless Car, and we'll explore some of those themes. Innovating Women, The Changing Face of Technology, and Immigrant Exodus. So welcome, Vivek, and thank you very much again for joining us today.
No, it's great to be talking to you.
Lovely. So let me start off, Vivek, by saying the following, that we, unbeknownst maybe to you, we really do have two things, and probably more things in common than we know. So the first thing is we are both immigrants to this fine country. You were born in Delhi, India, myself in Johannesburg, South Africa. So we're both immigrants with hopefully a little bit of an immigrant mentality coming over. And the second thing is that I think we are both fans of science fiction genre. I came across something in one of your writings that you're a fan of Star Trek, maybe a little bit post-Star Trek, but I'm a real big fan of a South African director by the name of Neil Blomkamp, who did some off let's say not such famous pieces such as District 9 and Elysium. But be that as it may, we're both sci-fi fundies. And I just got to hand it over to you at this point. And I just got to say, Vivek, would you ever have believed that life would resemble art as much as it is today relative to those Star Trek days back years ago?
Greg, you know, the reason why I love Star Trek is because it was the most positive, most hopeful science fiction work of its time. That even now, you know, most of the movies are darkness and all the things that could go wrong. Star Trek talked about this amazing future we can build in which the goal of humanity is to uplift itself, to go and seek new knowledge, you know, go where no one has gone before. It was always about knowledge and enlightenment. And since then, we've lost that sense of science fiction. You know, LCM, all these movies that you had mentioned, it's all about darkness, you know, one race killing another race. Why can't we have Star Trek? Why can't we, you know, reach for the stars and be doing that? Because what I see right now with technology is for us to build Star Trek about 350 years ahead of schedule. Then in the next 30 or 40 years, we could have the Starship Enterprise being launched and going to new worlds and seeking out new planets. We could be in an era of abundance in which we have all our wants and needs met, and we now are deciding how we can learn more and grow more and uplift humanity. That is entirely possible in the next 30 or 40 years.
Wow, as soon as that, huh? Okay,
yes.
Well, let's, so that's great, and I love the positivity, make no mistake about it. But, you know, this is unfortunately, fortunately, an investing podcast, first of all. And second of all, we are in a capitalist system, like it or not, where money does seek the best investments, the best return on capital, and whether that matches the idealistic, positive nature. And don't get me wrong, I'm really all for that. Maybe that's sometimes is the case, sometimes not. So let's get some context, if you will, and I'd like you to try and pinpoint where we are right now. So I'm going to give you a little bit of perspective, and then I want you to take it from there. So, let's pick up with Internet 1.0. as it's known, in the late 90s, which essentially wasn't, as I understand from your writing and others, it's an infrastructure build-out of the global World Wide Web. And that was a real boom time in stock markets, equity markets, followed by a bear market, 2002. So we're certainly in a technology bull market now. So Vivek, tell us where we are now and give us a bit of perspective of where we've come from and where we're going, please.
First of all, you know, when I talk about Star Trek, I also talk about Mad Max in the same sentence, because I also see an era of darkness, of dystopia, of things going wrong. But from a business perspective, you know, I've been, you know, what I teach at Carnegie Mellon University and now at Harvard Law School, and what I teach business executives, I actually do two-day crash courses for CEOs of billion-dollar companies across the globe. I show them how technologies are advancing and they're converging. And when they converge, they wipe out entire industries, because every industry I look at, I see is going to be decimated over the next 5 or 10 years or so. And I can walk you through any industry, anything from agriculture, finance, transportation. I can walk you through how the convergences of technologies are going to disrupt industries. We're not ready for this. You know, we've seen companies such as Uber come out of nowhere, and now we're talking about $70 billion valuations for a little car company, for a car, not even a car company, for an app. We now have Amazon and Apple being worth $1 trillion. I mean, that was sort of mind-blowing, you know, unthinkable. And now we have startups in Silicon Valley that come out of the blue and they're worth $1 billion overnight. This is because industries can now encroach on each other. We now have a series of technologies, everything from artificial intelligence to computers to network sensors, which are going to be impacting medicines. We have digital medicine. So it's when multiple technologies converge that you have this disruption. So when you brought AI together with sensors and with transportation, you suddenly had self-driving technologies. Those self-driving technologies are going to disrupt every automotive company before they know it, because with self-driving cars, we won't need as many cars anymore. We're going to be have a sharing economy in which we just lease them as we need to, which means that the big automotive companies, there will be one or two survivors, but the rest of them are going to be decimated. You know, if you look at what's happening now with, because this is something people don't have to realize. You look at the tech companies wanting to provide internet everywhere. Why do they want to provide internet everywhere? Because they want to capture the data. Name of the game is data. So you have Google, Facebook, you have SpaceX, you have OneWeb, you have a whole bunch of companies looking at developing microsatellites, drones, balloons that can blanket the planet with Wi-Fi access. So their motivation is data. But you know what the casualty of these companies is going to be? AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile. We still need one or two of them to bill us for the small amount that they're going to charge for unlimited Wi-Fi access everywhere. But the rest of them are going to be toast. We're talking about wiping out a multi-tens of billions of dollars telco industry within 5 years or less. I don't think anyone is ready for this. So this is why you have AT&T desperately buying Time Warner and getting into new areas that we could never imagine AT&T do it, because AT&T realizes that AT&T is one of the companies I've been coaching. I've done 14 sessions with them. We have discussed with their corporate executives. We have taught them about exponential technologies and advances, and I've had arguments with their executives, and they are seeing the light. They're now looking at what could happen to them, and they realize that they have to play the same game that Google does: data, 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 data. I mean, you look at agriculture. I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
I'm sorry, Vivek. I'm a bit of an interrupter, and I can see with you we've got a long stream of consciousness, a deep stream of consciousness, so forgive me for interrupting. But you said two things that I found interesting. The first was you made a comment that we're not ready for this, and I'm curious about what we're not ready for. And the other comment around, trillion-dollar value companies and billion-dollar unicorns, et cetera, is it correct then to say that as the tech world disrupts other industries, that valuation, which was attributable to the Verizons and the AT&Ts, get tacked on to the Amazons and the Apples of the world?
Yes. The fact is that every industry is going to be disrupted by technology. And the tech industry has figured this out. The game they're building is to build massive platforms, and they're eating everything in their sight. That's why their value keeps increasing the way it is, because they keep eating everything in sight, and it's data. So you have the tech industry now eating the taxi industry. You have the tech industry now eating the automobile industry. You have the tech industry now eating the communications industry. You have the tech industry eating the healthcare industry. What did Apple just announce last week? This watch. The key thing that they hyped was the EKG sensors. Apple is playing the long game here. They want to now be in the medical industry, $3 trillion industry in the United States. They want to eat it. That's how they're thinking.
So when you're referring to we are not ready for this, are you just talking about the scale of change that will occur, or what are we not ready for?
I'm talking about investors. They have no clue what's going on over here. I'm talking about CEOs of companies who are in denial, that they'd rather be complacent and cash in their big bonuses while they can. When they see their companies to be decimated, and they keep turning a blind eye to it. Our policymakers aren't ready. Look at the backlash against social media and GDPR and all of these things, because our policymakers weren't ready for it. The public aren't ready, because we're going to be faced with all sorts of decisions now about what's right and what's wrong. We would love to have these Amazon delivery drones come to our backyard, but they're going to have cameras on them, high definition cameras which record everything. Do you want Jeff Bezos snooping on you while you're in the shower while he happens to be delivering your package in your backyard? Well, are we ready for this? We haven't even. I know, but we haven't even had this discussion yet. Bezos already now has Amazon Alexa devices in our homes. Those devices are listening to everything that goes on there. They also have some with cameras and TV screens. He's snooping on everything that's happening in your home because he wants to learn everything about you so he can sell you more stuff on Amazon Prime. Are we ready for this? Yeah. No way.
So let's drill down on the investor part, the investors not being ready for this, because that's of interest to our listeners. And one gentleman which you quote many times in your works is, and I'm a big fan of his, is Peter Diamantis, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And he's famous for his terms, digitized, demonetized, dematerialized, democratized, in essence, basically taking something physical or real, converting it to digital, at which point its price drops dramatically and becomes available to the masses. So I'm going to ask you some quick hit questions, if that's all right. And really the theme here, Vivek, is how do our investors profit from these various innovations? How do you see the forest from the trees? And let's start with AI, because you mentioned AI is going to be intrinsic in everything. And I love your quote that AI will animate everything like electricity did. So AI is huge. Give us some examples as to how our listeners or our investors can profit from AI.
Okay, we keep hearing about AI. What we have today really is Excel spreadsheets on steroids. Wherever there's data, you can use AI to help you analyze it better. Now, AI is overhyped. A lot of companies are hyping the heck out of it. And when companies read the investor statements, you read AI. But the fact is that AI could be very useful. Now, if you can, understand really what it does, you understand that, this company has this type of data. And if they put the right scientists on it, this data will help them make better decision-making. If they make better decision-making, they can now profit. Look at Amazon. The reason why Amazon is so successful now is because it's gathered reams and reams of data, massive amounts of data on consumers and their spending habits. So it's able to now target ads to them, and those ads are indirectly their recommendation. So Amazon has figured this game out. Google has figured this game out. Facebook has figured this game out. And I'm talking about some of the most valuable companies in the world because they understood how to use AI. This is a very long conversation. Your investors have to read my book, Driving the Driverless Car, because it walks through all the core technologies and talks about the implications. It details all of these, all of these advances that are happening. Not all of them, many of them. And explains what they mean for us.
I understand. So give me an example of some of the wildest innovations you've seen, or startups you've seen capitalizing on AI.
Okay, almost every startup in Silicon Valley right now is using AI in one form or another, because they're gathering data. Whether they have sensors, whether they are gathering information from the web, they're gathering data. And here in Silicon Valley, they've understood what AI really is, but again, if they have enough data, they can use it meaningfully. So if you're looking at a startup to invest in, look at how much data are they gathering. How are they going to get millions and millions of data points and use it sensibly? If this startup claims that they have a medical device, an EKG device, and they have 500 customers, how many data points are they going to get from it? And then they make claims that, look, they're going to be able to do this and that with it. Look at how much data they have. And do they have the hundreds of thousands of millions of data points necessary to analyze it and then challenge their assertions based on that? So you've got to understand what the core of AI really is and what it isn't. Don't believe the hype about AI. It is being overhyped. But again, that doesn't mean it isn't valuable. It doesn't mean that we won't be adding it to everything. It won't become increasingly valuable over time. It just means that today what you're hearing is complete rubbish and you shouldn't fall for it.
Okay. Let's turn the conversation to something near and dear to my heart, and that is my home country or home continent of Africa. And you mentioned in your book, Drive and Driverless Car, about M-Pesa. And maybe for our listeners, explain what M-Pesa is. And again, tell us how, what one can seek to invest in that ecosystem and its growth.
I'll tell you what not to invest in. This whole Bitcoin crypto craze, the Silicon Valley is hyping the heck out of it as if it's a savior of mankind and it's going to be, and everyone's going to get filthy rich. Bitcoin is the greatest scam in modern history. It is a Ponzi scheme. And then you have all of this crypto nonsense that's going on, the blockchains and so on. It is being extremely overhyped. Not to say that there isn't value in blockchain, that long term there's going to be a lot of value in some applications of blockchain, but this whole crypto thing is nonsense. How do you know that's true? Go to where you were talking about M-Pesa. M-Pesa has been around for about a decade now, and half of the economy of Kenya right now runs on it. What is M-Pesa? It's simply a way of sending money from one person to another using SMSs, using text on smartphones. Okay. And started off being the equivalent of minutes, cell phone minutes, and then it became the account that you have with like when you pay AT&T or Verizon, you're paying your bill over there. Well, put a little bit of extra money in there and you can wire that from one person to another. It was that simple. Now, if you want to look at the future of crypto and why not to invest in all this crypto nonsense, look at China. China now has a $13 trillion digital currency economy. The vast majority of transactions now are being done on Alipay, WeChat, on their smartphones. Even beggars, they have QC codes. They won't take cash anymore. This happened in the last 5 years in China. China already has the world's leading crypto economy. While we sit over here and hear all this nonsense about crypto this, crypto that, and blockchain this, blockchain that, don't invest in it. You're being deluded. You're being fooled.
Okay. Well, passionate. So I appreciate that. Okay. Let's turn the conversation. And this is something I gather you're quite passionate about. Just from reading your material, and I'm gonna call it, it's under the medical field, but I'm gonna go one further. I'm gonna say, what is the likelihood of a person living amongst us today that they may be immortal in a physical sense? They may be able to sustain their life for an indefinite period of time.
Greg, now you're getting to the craziness of Silicon Valley. I have many friends who believe that if we live another, like Ray Kurzweil, the greatest futurist of our time, he believes that if he lives roughly another 10 or 15 more years, he'll live forever, because he's now head of research at Google, where he's working on uploading the brain. Literally, what he's working on is a method of decrypting the neurons in our brain and uploading it to the cloud. And the thesis is that once you upload it to the cloud, your consciousness lives forever. He's working on that. And then there are other people who are working on life extension, who are looking at eliminating aging itself, looking at what makes us age and removing that. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of companies here which are looking at technology such as this, because these people want to live forever. Larry Page, the founder of Google, he is passionately believes in Ray Kurzweil and Ray's vision for the future, and Larry wants to live forever. This is the stuff these people are working on. Now, it's still science fiction. It'll be at least 5 or 7 years before I believe any of this nonsense. But my friends do. And they're really, really, really smart people, and I respect them. So watch this space. It's too early to get excited. But there are people who believe that if we can live another 10, 15 years, we will have the ability to now merge with the cloud and live forever.
Okay. Wow. I'm not sure I want to live forever, to be honest with you. But
neither do I.
Just bring it to a practical perspective. You see, the problem we face as mere investors looking over into Silicon Valley and other technology areas is there's this inundation of startups and potential, you know, potential world-breaking, changing innovations. And again, you know, how does one select one from the other to invest in? It is a little bit beyond me, to be honest. And I am managing, you know, several billions of dollars. So again, any thoughts around how do you pick the winners from the losers in this space, or is that a fool's errand?
Greg, it really is like going to the casino. I mean, no matter what anyone says to you, it's really like going to the casino, because even when you're onto a big idea, there's so many different people that do, you know, doing the same thing. It's luck and timing that does it. In Silicon Valley, there's another weapon, money. The massive, massive amounts of money. So you have the winner-take-all effect. You have the big guys pouring money into a company over and over. You know, Uber is the best example of it. Literally in the tens of billions of dollars being poured into it, despite the fact it was screwing up everything left, right, and center. It had a CEO who was just disgusting and a horrible human being, and they had to push him out. It went through all that, but they kept pouring money into it to the point that it succeeded. So that's a game that's being played in Silicon Valley. And if you were competing against Uber, even though you may have had a better technology, you had no hope. So they have to be aware that this is a deck that's really rigged against them, and it really is like the casino. Having said that, you know, you have to go by your gut feel. For example, I don't invest. I'm a professor. I'm not, you know, rich like you and your friends are. However, I did invest in one company in India, which was developed a device called HealthCube. What's HealthCube? HealthCube is an Apple TV-like device that does the same medical tests that hospitals do. What did these founders do? They, you know, got the same sensors that are being used in expensive medical devices. They built their own platform, and then they started testing it in India. Over a period of 2 years, they got this thing working, and now they're rolling it out all over the developing world. I saw the potential in it, and I knew that the technology worked because I'd seen it in action in the villages there. So I decided to invest in it. I got my friends to invest in it, and the company is doing extremely well. I mean, and the strategy has been to keep it away from the venture capitalists, because I did take it to Andreessen and to Vinod Khosla, and all they could think about was money, 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 taking it to the rich. And I said, no, I want to help the poor first. So this device already has had more than 1 million tests done with it, the new version of it. But it'll go to 100 million by next year, which means that if nothing else, even if they gave the hardware away, the data on 100 million, diagnostics, sure. Tens of millions of people, it's worth a fortune. So I was able to put one and one together and say, okay, this is a good investment. This is what your investors have to realize, that the rules of the game have changed. We're in a new era of technology. They have to learn the basics about the technology, and then they have to go with their instinct and their gut feel and look at the core technologies, look at the convergence of the technologies, and then look at the founders of the companies. Are they, you know, experienced, competent executives? Do they have crazy visions? Crazy visions are good, by the way. Great, you know, having big grand visions is good, but are they grounded? Do they have the experience to be able to pull it off? And then will they have enough funding to get this technology, you know, through the paces it needs? And that's how you make your investment decisions now.
Yeah. Well, I'll postulate one thing, Vivek, and that's merely just listening to you. India, as we're all aware, is a heavily populated country with millions and millions, or a billion people, if I'm not mistaken, and so that is a lot of data. And as you had said prior, look at the data, look at how much data is being collected and what's being done with it. So I think that seems to be a common thread, if you will. It's the data that's the value.
Data is the new oil is the expression we use in Silicon Valley, because with data, once you use AI to understand it, it helps you make better decisions. And this is why Amazon is worth $1 trillion now, because it used data. This is why Google is worth in the hundreds of billions of dollars. This is why Facebook is worth in the hundreds of billions of dollars, because it's all a data game. Data is everything. It's the most valuable asset there is in the technology industry.
Yeah, I don't want to harp on it, but I liken it to, look, I'm a financial guy, and so I'm constantly thinking about arbitrage, right? And arbitrage means seeing something in one area that others don't. And certainly the ability to analyze big data or data at a certain level, you know, everything's inefficient until you see it at that higher level. So anyway, I do want to touch on one other area.
Before finishing on that, let me go back to the graduate. You know, the word in the graduate was plastics. That's what data is.
Right.
Keep going.
I want to speak a bit about education. Again, another thing close to my heart, given my roots. And you know, you said something very interesting, which I didn't quite realize initially, and that was I recall the Khan Institute, where the Khan, you know, basically a free university online.
And Khan Academy.
Khan Academy. Thank you, Vivek. And the Khan Academy was going to revolutionize education, certainly in the developing world, because of the access to, you know, free education. But alas, it never actually did that. It may have made inroads, but never accomplished, I think, the grand vision. And you speak about Dr. Mitra's Hole in the Wall project, which I also found very interesting. So tell us a little bit about your vision for education and how that, you know, gosh, it's a big one, but talk about education in the developing world and how that's going to be revolutionized.
Greg, let me go back in time. When we first had television, you know, no one had a vision for what to do with television. So they took the radio stars, gave them microphones, and those are the first TV shows, were literally radio shows with microphones. That's what Khan Academy is. These MOOCs, massive online courses, essentially YouTube videos of people giving their courses. But that's not education. Education is an interactive process. The future of education is having AI, digital tutors, and virtual reality, and having sensors. So imagine now, let's move forward 5 years. I'm not talking more than 5 years, let's move out five years, that you have an AI tutor on your laptop, and the camera on the laptop is looking at your face, and it notices that you're reading, sorry, you're interested in what it's showing you, so it continues. On the other hand, it notices you're getting dazed and sleepy, so it changes the topic. It essentially can recognize, you know, that you learned or not learned. And then, you know, for your child, some children like reading books or hearing stories. Others want to watch videos. Others want to go and experience in virtual reality. So you put your virtual reality headset on. Instead of learning, you know, Spanish by, you know, rote memorization, you go into Mexico or you go into Spain and you start conversing with the natives over there. Instead of learning history, you go into a virtual reality simulation and you experience what happens there. You learn culture and values by going into ancient Greece and learning that way. This is what's going to be possible within 5 years from now.
5 years, goodness, that's a blink of an eye, practically.
Exactly. Now the technologies will be there. That doesn't mean we'll have the lessons there. But 5 to 10 years from now is when these technologies get built. It's going to revolutionize and transform the entire education process.
Yeah, and I should say it's going to unleash a level of global wealth that we haven't seen. I mean, just can you imagine if, you know,
average
person in South Africa or Kenya was, you know, highly educated. It's phenomenal. So, Vivek, love the optimism, love the energy for sure, and, you know, would love to speak for days on it. It's just such a vast subject. It's hard to get one's arms around it. So, if I may, let me hand it over to you for any final thoughts or anything specific to our listeners regarding, you know, just investing and your view on the world, I guess.
Yeah, you know, this is the most amazing and most scary and most disruptive time in human history. We have the ability to solve the grand challenges of humanity and create a Star Trek future. We also could descend into Mad Max. But from a business perspective, there's going to happen more change happening over the next 5 or 7 years than you've ever seen before. Your investment thesis from the past don't work anymore. You've got to learn about the new technologies. You have to learn about all of these advances that I'm talking about and understand what they mean and then put them into the context of your investments and think about, well, what is this going to mean for this type of company? How could this company be disrupted? And make your investment decisions accordingly. But the key here is to understand the basics, to understand the core of these technologies. And, you know, I mentioned my book. Of course, I have a bias, you know, towards my own book, Driving the Driverless Car. But there are many other sources of information. Learn it from wherever you can.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, in the driverless car. Wonderful read, and really thank you very much for contributing that to the world at large. So Vivek, I really appreciate your time. My listeners really appreciate your time, and one can reach you on your website at vivekwadwa.com, I think is your
No, it's wadwa.com, wadhwa.com, and wadwa.com, there's lots and lots of stuff there.
Lovely. Well, Vivek, thank you so much again for your time. I know you're a busy guy, and you got some big thoughts to make. So again, appreciate the time. Thanks very much, and have a wonderful day.
Same to you, my friend. Thank you.